Marvelites. You are listening to Marvel's Pull List for new Marvel Comics on sale November 23rd, 2022. I'm Ryan Penagos, aka Agent M.
And I'm Jasmine Estrada. The M stands for monkey.
Wait, did you say M stands for monkey?
Yeah, that's what it stands for. I'm letting everybody know because everyone keeps asking.
You know what? I'll go with it. That's fine.
Okay, sounds good.
Yep. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody who is celebrating. If you're seeing family, friends, taking some time for yourselves, good. Be thankful for great Marvel comics because we got a whole lot to talk about this week. There's some really fun stuff. And if you are not already going to be stuffed from all the good food, you better eat right now because we're going to get into a comic.
Yes.
Later on, that is going to make you so hungry, you don't even know.
Yes, we're talking to Michelin chef Paul Eschbach about Test Kitchen Infinity Comics issues 1-3, as well as the Halloween special and the Thanksgiving special that is out right now. Highly recommend you eat before you read these and or listen to our reading club because we're going to talk about a lot. And a lot of food.
Yeah, which is great. I love to eat. And Chef Paul loves to cook. So we're going to get into that. It's really fun. That's going to be our reading club later. But of course, we have so many things to talk about in terms of other comics because this is the official Marvel podcast for Marvel Comics, where we run you through all the brand new comics out this week, give you our three picks for our personal favorites, tell you what other books are out, and give out some awards to those, read some of your emails and your messages. And tell you what's hitting Marvel Unlimited, what collections are out, all that good stuff. Like we said, it's a big honking episode. Let's get into it with our picks of the week. First up for this fabulous week. You know what? And I said, Jasmine, as we were picking our picks before we started, I'm going meat and potatoes. Two great issues of wonderful comics that are not like new launches. They're not like big World Ender issues. They're just damn excellent issues of favorite series of ours. So the first one is Daredevil, issue number 5, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Rafael De La Torre, and colors by Matthew Wilson, with lettering by VC's Clayton Cowles. Big, important stuff to know. The Daredevils are married.
Yes.
The 4D right there.
Mr. D-D-D-D. And Mrs.
That's what,
Double D.
Quadruple D.
Quadruple D.
Quadruple D. There's all kinds of stuff going on because the Daredevils are putting together the fist to go up against the hand. And over on the hand side of thing, mystical ninja, nasty crew of people. That's being led in a lot of ways by Punisher. So you've got stuff that's been going on in the Punisher books lately and stuff that's going on in Daredevil. And they're running through these interesting parallel paths, not necessarily fighting each other a ton, but you can see that there are big things happening across these lines, which makes sense. I remember when I was a kid reading Daredevil and Punisher comics where they were going up against each other. There's a Wills Portacio drawn issue of, I want to say it's Daredevil with Punisher and Daredevil on the cover and they fight. It was so nasty. I loved that issue when I was a kid. But here we just get a really awesome issue as you watch Matt and Elektra and Stick putting together their army, figuring out how they're going to go up against the mystical ninja clan of the hand, who can resurrect the dead, who have gotten bolder and meaner and scarier over time. And in some ways, Daredevil is like, we have to do that too. So in this issue, it's a lot of like world building, character building, story layering, but also full of fun supervillains. We get to see Stegron in here, which made me so happy.
So pumped. Stiltman?
Stiltman having like a cute little moment. Like,
yeah.
It was really great. We get U.S. Agent versus Daredevil, which is a fight I was super into.
Dude, those two pages, like what, two or three pages of a fight, that encounter was something that like I didn't know I wanted.
Yeah.
But as it plays out in those couple pages, it's so badass.
Yeah. A lot of stuff going on. I don't want to give too much away. I will say that Daredevil has two weapons. One he acquires in this issue, and one we just notice him utilizing for the first time. And I was just like, Oh, this is a like a nastier part of Daredevil. He's like playing for keeps. It's a really exciting time for Daredevil comics. And I'm very much looking forward to where it goes. Just honestly, rock solid issue. Something that gives me that vibe of like, I need the next one. That feeling of I want more of this story right now. That's sometimes all we need to say this is one of our favorites of the week.
All right, next up, my pick of the week is Miracle Man by Gaiman and Buckingham, The Silver Age, number 2. And it's written by Neil Gaiman with art by Mark Buckingham, colors by Jordi Belair, and lettering by Todd Klein. Shocking absolutely no one. This is probably my favorite book that we're putting out right now. This issue picks up where we left off in the last issue, where we have young Miracle Man waking up after he's been resurrected by Miracle Man, and he is kind of having to come to terms with everything that's happened. In this issue, more than the last issue, we have him not only experiencing, you know, all the technology shifts, but also his stature. You know, like, since he's left, like, Miracle Man has kind of become a god. And so he's being presented and paraded around in different cities. He's, you know, he's got to show face and be like, yeah, like, I'm young Miracle Man. Like, I'm mm-hmm. back. Like, let's go. It's like he's on a press tour. And this is not, like, what he's used to. And as he continues to go from place to place, he's realizing that, you know, how much the world has changed. He's reading comics about all these different experiences. He's watching movies about and documentaries about the events that have happened in the last arc by Gaiman and Buckingham. And it's terrifying. You know, it's putting a lot of questions into his head. But meanwhile, we also get to see a little bit more about what's going on in Miracle Man's head and Miracle Woman's head, and kind of like what, how they're kind of dealing with this new, I guess, like, someone new has entered the chat, and they're like, okay, we got to figure out where does he fit into all of this. Miracle Woman has some ideas. She has a theory that she makes Miracle Man essentially test out here, and the results are pretty spectacular. I mean, I don't know, like, it's written in a way where you don't really know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but it's really, really exciting. It's very, you know, real. It's something that we've seen as like a trope in comic books, you know, with when it comes to certain characters and their sidekicks, their teenage sidekicks especially. So I'm really happy and excited to see this kind of play out here. And mm-hmm. the reaction is very much something that I know so many people have experienced, because it changes everything about, you know, the way that they see the world. The other thing that I really, really liked about this issue is this issue has been printed before. It's not the exact same art. Mark Buckingham has kind of, you know, he's redone the art for this issue. And at the second half of this comic, you get to see almost like a page by page comparison that I just adored, because you get to see, yeah. you know, what it looked like a couple years ago.
A couple years ago? That's like 20 years ago.
Yeah, 20 years ago, you get to see the difference. And it's really cool if you're a fan of comic books to just see the choices that he's made differently, you know, how he's doing it this time around, how technology plays a role, how, you know, certain facial reactions are, you know, depicted, the acting, everything. It's really, really fascinating. But, like, you know, on that same note, Ryan, 20 years ago, the thing that, like, shocks me the most about this issue is the conclusion to this issue is so shocking, and it, like, is such a cliffhanger that I cannot imagine what it was like when it first came out 20 years ago, and having to wait this long to, you know, get that second half of that story. That's wild to me. Bonkers.
Yeah. I have to correct myself, because time doesn't make any sense to me. 20 years to me is in the 90s, is the early 90s. It was 30 years ago, because these initials, these came out in 1991, 2, 3, that time period from these issues. So yeah.
Yeah, this issue is older than me.
Yes.
Or the original issue was.
Man.
But I love, love, love this book. And like I said, any fan of comic books and comic book history should be picking this up. Those extra pages at the end are just an incredible, like, archive of just so many different things, especially Mark Buckingham's art and technique.
Yeah. One of the key things about all this is, yeah, it's a 30-year-old book, but it feels contemporary in its yeah. writing and its flow. And of course, Mark, even the originals felt very, like, advanced, felt futuristic then. They feel even contemporary now. But then his updated look and feel and everything that Mark has been doing in re-examining it and redrawing it in a lot of ways, it's spectacular. Just some of the best comics out there. All right, our third pick of the week is X-Men number 17. This is written by Jerry Duggan, art by friend of the show, Joshua Cassara. I guess Jerry's a friend of the show too. Fun.
Yeah, I guess.
And with colors by Guru EFX and letters by VC's Clayton Cowles. Like I said, you know, meat and potatoes, bread and butter, just damn good comics that are part of these ongoing stories, and we can't help but absolutely fall in love with them. This one is kind of important for a lot of stories that have been going on for the X-Men for years. It follows as Forge has gone into the vault, where the children of the vault have been. We had previously seen these stories originally by Jonathan Hickman and Lanil Yu, I believe. But John Hickman was writing these stories about Darwin, Wolverine, aka Laura, and Sync going in there, investigating, doing the stuff. They got lost in there. They got stuck in there. Darwin was stuck in there. Wolverine never came out. She was dead. And eventually Sync was sort of rescued in a way. And this has been the mission to go get Darwin, because Darwin's got one of those really cool, weird powers of he can survive anything. And so it's been the big quest for what happened to him and can they rescue him? And you got this, just Jerry is so twisted. He lets Forge create this suit that utilizes pieces of Mystique, but the personality powers and some memories of Caliban, who has the ability to track mutants. And he turns Caliban's face is this big X on Forge's chest, which is super twisted, but really important to how this story progresses. Ultimately, we saw last issue, there was a big revelation. They found something, and it was not Darwin. They found another character. I won't spoil it if you haven't, seen it.
If you're not caught up.
Yeah, if you're not fully caught up, but they found that. And in this issue, you see what that means and the repercussions of Forge being that's not the mission. Peace. And yeah. Caliban, sweet boy Caliban. I love Caliban so much. He's just he's been used and abused, and he's just a good dude who gets roped into bad situations. Always, always, always. And he's the voice of reason and hope and empathy in the storyline, because it's also a horror story in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. What can happen to the mutants? What can happen with the children of the vault unchecked? All kinds of things. But ultimately, one of the main reasons why I chose this was it gives me something I crave from our X-Men comics right now: happiness. There are moments of pure beauty and joy and relief in this comic, even the last couple pages, which are a sweet ending, if not necessarily a happy ending. It's something that we have not gotten a lot of in the Krakoa era, because it's been, they're in this utopian paradise that is Krakoa, safety for all mutants, but it is nightmare after nightmare after nightmare, and it's horror show, which makes for great comics. But I just need two sweet characters to kiss, and that happens here. And there's a lot of stuff in this which is great.
When I got to that section in this book, you said, it's not a perfect ending by any means. This has so many other consequences that we still have yet to learn. And I'm very curious to see how Jerry deals with it. But when I got to that page, I got butterflies. We were joking about this earlier, Ryan, where I told you, every time I open up a new X-Men book, I'm am I going to cry this issue? Yeah. And this was one of those issues where I'm oh my God, almost started crying, tearing up, but in pure happiness and joy. Cause it's this is something that, a lot of fans have been asking about, and it's a story that's been there since the beginning of, Jonathan Hickman's X-Men run. So it's very, it's a staple in here, and I'm excited to see where it goes and terrified to see where it goes, really. Mm-hmm. But I'm also happy, and I love this. I love these types of moments.
Yeah. Huge shout out to Joshua Cassara and Guru EFX. There's a big splash page of Krakoa, a version of Krakoa, that is so detailed and cool. And then especially as you get into little other bits and pieces of it, you find yourself looking at it and sort of dreaming of that reality in some ways. But there's also the big, hugely emotional splash page that Josh draws later on. Somebody better buy that damn page and yes. frame it and then send me a picture. Somebody out there. It is perfect. It is a perfect page.
Yes.
Oh my God. So those are three picks from us. We're going to get into all the rest. But before we do that, we got to get into our community section and our awards. Jasmine, what was last week's award?
Last week's award was the You Could Learn a Thing or Two from Cats Award. And it actually came from Captain America and Winter Soldier Special Issue Number 1.
Yeah, and it was we got a winner pretty quickly this week from Karis Pollard at A. Karis Pollard saying, "And look, I found the Marvel's pull list quote. I hoped it would be talking about Alpine, but I thought that would be too good to be true, but it wasn't. Alpine is such a clever kitty." For anybody who doesn't know, Alpine is Bucky's cat's sweet little kitty cat who does play a role in the comic.
Congrats, Karis. This was awesome. Thank you for tweeting at us and sharing the rest of your picks this week.
Yeah.
We also have a couple of emails over in our community section. We got an email from Merwa Ayodele, who is the writer on the Iron Man short story that we talked about last issue. One, he wanted to thank us for mentioning for all the love that we expressed on his short story. But two, that you remember when you couldn't figure out where the Blade Runner reference was in the comics last week?
Yes.
It was in this short story. And Merwa had a little chuckle about it. He was like, tell Ryan that it's in Iron Man 25.
Yeah. Look, I knew it was there, but we read a lot of comics, Merwa.
I know.
And so, look, thank you for letting us know. Everybody can go back, read Iron Man 25, catch that reference, and also get excited for I Am Iron Man, which was officially announced recently. Merwa and Dotun are doing the Iron Man story. They've been teasing for us. I can't freaking wait.
Dude, that cover that Dotun did,
yeah.
Insane. Yes, bonkers.
Yes. Very excited for all of that and so much more. We also had an email from Joe Hoffman who said, I really enjoyed listening to the most recent episode of the podcast. From your picks of the week, I'm adding Murder World Avengers to my regular pull list. The premise of the comic sounds really cool, especially with the story being told from the POV of a podcaster. It seems like every time I turn around, I'm finding new inspiration from y'all, either in the form of an amazing comic book miniseries like Avengers Children's Crusade, or in podcasts hosted by two righteous true believers such as yourselves who love comics, pop culture, and doing good in the world. I immensely appreciate it. All right.
Love our faithful ambassador for the United States of Marvel's pull list and the People's Republic of This Week in Marvel.
Mm-hmm. All right. What do we have for an award name this week?
All right, this week, short and sweet, we're going to be giving out the Bladder Like a Baby Award this week.
Easy peasy. We're going to be giving that to all the rest of the books that are out this week. And if you, dear listener, find this quote, screen cap it and tweet it to @AgentM and @Jasmiest with #MarvelsPullList or email us at pulllist@marvel.com. If you're among the first, keep your emails handy, your DMs open. I'll hit you back with something cool. All right. Again, that award name is Bladder Like a Baby, and let's get into it. First up is Alien Number 3, which we've had, you know, a bunch of really great Alien stories. This may be my favorite because it gives us something we haven't seen enough of because we're focused mostly on the synthetics in the Alien universe, these sort of androidy robot creatures, but they are very much real and they feel and they love and they have all these different emotions going on, but them going up against aliens and then the stories that are building up around this, it is intense. And then I will give my Bladder Like a Baby Award to the final page because it is terrifying.
Real scary. All right, next up we have All Out Avengers Number 3. And in this issue, the Avengers are confronted with an army of life model decoys that are all Red Skull flavored. And I'm going to go ahead and give my Bladder Like a Baby Award to just like the fun that the Avengers are having in this issue, because they're all just, you know, like Black Panther starts it off and he's just like, any opportunity to kick the Red Skull in the face should be embraced with all the joy in your heart. And then we have She-Hulk who's like, beating up fascists is such guilt-free fun. And I'm like, you know what? You guys are right. I love this. This is awesome. I love it. Love beating up fascists.
Love it. All right. Amazing Spider-Man number 14. gets an honorary pick of the week for me. I remember how much I loved this issue. It's so good, but it gives us the reveal, the origin, the story behind the brand new character, Hollow's Eve, who has this design by Ed McGuinness, which is so good. It is
so cool.
Ridiculous how good this is. I can't wait to see cosplayers go out as Hollow's Eve. She's incredible. I will give my Bladder Like a Baby award to the entire creative team here because it's split into four parts. This issue is split into seasons, spring, summer, fall, winter. Zeb Wells writing it, but we've got incredible art from Michael Dowling, Kyle Hotz, Terry Dodson, and Ryan Stegman as the story of Hollow's Eve comes together and you find out who she is, what she's gone through to get where she is, and how this all plays into Dark Web. I'm talking myself into saying this is one of our picks of the week, even though it's not officially one of our picks of the week. It's so good. It's so good.
It's so hard not to spoil, too. It's just perfect. There's so much about this character that I adore, and I love what they're doing with them. And it's...
I know.
I'm done talking. I'm going to spoil it if I keep talking.
Yeah, there's also, I want to shout out, we sometimes talk about variant comics. One of the variant comics has Spidey with a Santa hat and Deadpool in it. It's just such a vibe, and I am here for it. Made me real happy.
All right, next up, we have Avengers Forever, issue number 11. And in this issue, like we've seen in past issues of Avengers Forever, we are continuing to collect a bunch of Avengers from across the multiverse to bring them together to fight the Masters of Evil of the multiverse. And in this particular issue, I'm going to give my Bladder Like a Baby award to Robbie Reyes, a.k.a. the Ghost Rider, a.k.a. the All Rider, because in the past couple of issues in this entire arc that Jason Aaron's been building, he's been playing a very important role. And it's a role that like doesn't give him much room to explore his humanity. And it's something that I think I've been getting more and more hungry for. I know a lot of other Ghost Rider fans have been getting hungry for because he's just kind of been this vehicle for the characters throughout the multiverse. He's the one who is in charge, or he's the one who can do this. And in this issue, he is haunted, but like we get some of that humanity back, and it's exactly what I wanted. And Jason Aaron just knows how to hit it. And it was worth the wait. I am so excited for Avengers Assemble. Like this was like the last piece I needed before going into that event. And I am so pumped. Yeah.
All right. The next three books are all super weird and super trippy in a lot of ways, starting with Deadly Neighborhood Spider-Man number 2. Holy moly, this is wild. It's Spidey is in LA and he is fighting a demon bear, and there's mythology and stories that going in all kinds of directions. It's so cool, so weird. It's beautiful, beautiful art by Juan Ferreira, but I would give a million awards to this. I would give my Bladder Like a Baby award to the art, to the cool stories that are within the stories here. But I'm going to give my Bladder Like a Baby award to the groin sound effect as someone knees Spidey in the groin in one of the panels here. And it just cracked me up.
I definitely caught that.
So good.
I definitely caught that too. Yeah. That was so good.
That's great.
All right. Next up, we have Defenders Beyond, issue number 5. I can go on and on about this series. I think you and I have both like praised it for how amazing it is. This book is gorgeous. It is so well written. It is very, very, very high concept. I had to read this issue at least 3 times to really soak in everything that it happens in this issue, which I love because you get more bang for your buck. You find new things each read. These characters are just so complex. And in this one, we get to explore a little bit more about Loki and how he plays a role in all of this. But I don't want to give away too much because if you've been reading the series, you know exactly what you're going to get. But I do want to give my Bladder Like a Baby award to Al Ewing for adding 3 quotes that open up this issue. The first one by Albert Einstein, you know, pretty famous, you know, scientist guy.
Yeah.
Then we have Eugene Debs, who is a political activist. And the last one, Loki. 3 very important people. But it sets the stage for this book so well. And again, you have to remember, it's a high concept book. There's a lot going on in here. You're going to have to expand the way you might think about comic books when you read this one.
Yeah. Speaking of expanding the way you think about comic books, let's talk about Doctor Strange Fall Sunrise number 1. This is a spiritual successor, I will say, to Silver Surfer Black from a couple years ago, where Trad Moore drew and colored and did the artwork on that beautiful, beautiful series. And now Trad has taken the reins as writer and artist for this Doctor Strange series. It is wild. I'm just going to give my Bladder Like a Baby award to some of the most beautiful, trippy, like fluid and liquidy visuals you will see in any comic anywhere right now. Trad is doing some unreal stuff throughout this. Could have been one of our picks just from the art alone. It is a wild one. It's going to take, I think it's one that will benefit from a couple of reads as you grasp the story and see where they're going, especially as we get more issues. But it ends with Doctor Strange in a very precarious position. Yeah, I'm looking at it now. It's so striking. Can't wait for everybody to get their hands on this one.
Yes. Next up, we have Genus Vell, Captain Marvel, issue number 5. And this is the last issue of this miniseries. There's a lot that happens in here. Our characters all finally kind of meet up at this one point that has to do a lot with a particular character who's been held hostage, who might have a relationship with Rick Jones, or maybe not at the end of this issue. We've got to read to find out. But I'm going to give my Bladder Like a Baby award to the personification of life in this issue, because I was so fascinated. I mean, like, we see death in countless Marvel comics, and it only raises the question, like, okay, if death is personified in the Marvel universe, then life has to be as well. And when we meet this character, it is so, it's just like, oh yeah, of course. But the way that they're presented, the way that they're introduced, and the way that they fit in this story is very fascinating. A lot of world building going on here.
Yeah, for like these cosmic abstracts, we have love and hate, we have order and chaos. Mm-hmm. Why would we not have a life?
Exactly.
It makes perfect sense. It feels like it's such a Peter David thing to like come up with and give a cool like persona and attitude. And yeah, this feels like a kind of big thing for the Marvel Universe. I dig it. All right, we have Midnight Suns number 3 this week, and we've got a whole bunch of demons and nasty stuff, but really cool background work for Agatha Harkness. So if you are an Agatha fan, there's a lot going on in this series and in this issue. I'm going to give my Bladder Like a Baby award, though, to how Kushala, the spirit rider, spirits up the ride that the heroes have in this weird dimension that they're stuck in. It is a giant flying thing, and the visual of it, the way it happens, it rules. It was really cool.
Yeah. All right, next up we have Star Wars Revelations, issue number 1. Last week I talked a lot about Hidden Empire, which was the Star Wars book that came out last week. It was a new number 1 issue that was kind of setting the stage for what's to come in the Star Wars universe over on the comics side. This issue, I think, pairs really nicely with it. If you're looking for a place to get started with Star Wars comics, like, this is the place to do it. It brings the 4 main stories that are happening in the Star Wars universe together. It weaves them really nicely. It shows how they're all connected, even though they might not seem like it. And it's a great introduction. I cannot recommend this one enough for that. That said, I'm going to give my Bladder Like a Baby award to Darth Vader, because not only does he play an integral role in this issue, he's a little sassy in this issue, and I kind of dig it.
Yeah.
I'm here for it.
All right, we've got another Star Wars issue with Star Wars Yoda number 1. This was a lot of fun. It's a mix of Yoda being completely badass and like standing there and being
cool.
You just those moments that, like, when you first saw Yoda pop the lightsaber in the movies and watch him flip around and like kick ass, you get a lot of that Yoda in here. But also, and where I'm going to give my Bladder Like a Baby award, you just get Yoda being Yoda, a little cryptid, a little weird, yeah, a little sassy, funny, talking back, just completely driving people insane. But obviously he's Yoda. He knows the hell what he's doing. So let him do it. Look, if you're at all a fan of Yoda, you got to pick this up.
It's like Yoda being badass when he doesn't even need to be badass.
Seriously.
Like, he goes out of his way to be like, you know what? I'm going to take this one. Don't worry, guys. Take a seat. All right. Last up, we have X-Force issue number 34. This could have also been a pick of the week. if only just because this is an issue that I know you and I have been waiting for every time we talk about X-Force and we bring up Sage and her drinking problem. We're constantly wondering what's going to happen. And in this issue, not only do we get to see her kind of begin to deal with it and address it, but we see how other members of X-Force either... some of them help. Some of them are trying to. Some of them are very... like, it feels like it's like the world's worst kept secret on X-Force because everyone's very aware of it. But there's one member, and if you've been reading this book, I'm pretty sure you can guess who it is, who's been... manipulating or is using this against her, and the way he does it is so I had to swear there because there's no other way to say it. I don't know, that hit me so hard when I read it, and I have to give my Bladder Like a Baby award to this creative team for not only telling a wonderful story, but I think alcoholism is something that isn't often seen. Everybody pretends like it could never happen to them, but when we see it here, here's one of the smartest people in Krakoa, like falling victim to something like this. And when you learn why, it's heartbreaking. And I love seeing this type of story, this type of evolution. It's very real. I'm sure everybody knows someone who's, you know, fallen victim to something like this. And it's like rooting for your best friend when you're reading this book.
Yeah, it's... yeah, I have a friend who's, you know, in recovery and always will be. And watching this is terrifying and scary, and it should be terrifying and scary and sad. Yeah, all the things you said. It's intense. Great issue for sure. All right, those are the new comics on sale now this week, but we got a ton more. We've got a second volume of Amazing Spider-Man by Zeb Wells and John Romita Jr. We've got...
Carnage Volume 1, which is a sleeper fave for us. That book has been a surprisingly beautiful book for a serial killer character.
Also, of course, it's the time of the year, so there's new omnibuses, Aliens, the original years, Volume 3, Spectacular Spider-Man, and more. Go ask your local comic shop for all of that. And then over on Marvel Unlimited, what Infinity Comics do we have this week, Jasmine?
Yes, we have a bunch of Infinity Comics hitting shelves this week. Highly recommend you download the MU app and download some of these comics while you're traveling. Unless you're driving, please don't drive and read comics. Not a good thing. But if you're catching a flight or hopping on a bus, now's the perfect time to get caught up on all these Infinity Comics. We have Avengers Unlimited Infinity Comic number 21 and Spider-Verse Unlimited Infinity Comic number 25. We have Electric Rain chapter 4. We have Marvel's Voices Black Panther Infinity Comic number 27, Love Unlimited Hulkling and Wiccan Infinity Comic 25, and Alligator Loki issue number 13. And we have Test Kitchen Thanksgiving Special Infinity Comic number 1, which will touch on a little bit towards the end of our reading club this week with Chef Paul.
Nice little teaser there. Over on the rest of Marvel Unlimited, we've got Axe, Death to the Mutants number 1. We've got Avengers 1 million BC number 1, which is a really big issue for that. New issues of Captain Marvel, Daredevil, Hulk, Iron Cat, and X-Men, as well as plenty, plenty more. Check them all out over on Marvel Unlimited, where you could also read the Test Kitchen Infinity comic. Why, Jasmine?
Because we are talking to Michelin star Chef Paul Eschbach about Test Kitchen and his career as a chef and how that converges with comic books. You'd be shocked to learn how similar they are.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Stay hungry.
Always.
Mm-hmm. All right, everybody, I hope you have eaten recently because we're going to be talking about some food and some good stuff. Yeah, literally, Jasmine and I were talking about making sure we had eaten before getting into the comics that we're going to talk about, because we are going to be talking about Test Kitchen, the Infinity Comics, with writer and chef Paul Eschbach. Hello, Paul.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Whoa. Paul isn't just a normal chef. He's a Michelin star chef. Come on. We got to give him his dues.
Guys, the team I worked with, we earned it. It was a team effort. Come on, that was a few years ago. It was a few years ago. I appreciate that, though.
Own it.
I'm owning it. I'm told. I have to work on that more.
Hell yeah.
Good. Paul, have you been a comic fan your entire life? Did you grow up reading comics? What's your history with Marvel?
I think for me, when I'm 43 now, I'm old. I must have. I would say I lived in Japan as a kid, and I got into like Dragon Ball Z and that sort of stuff,
yeah,
and all the manga, and then I came back to the United States when I was like 13, 12, 13, and that's when I got into Marvel. I remember buying like, I think it was Jim Lee was still drawing for X-Men. It was like the beginning back then. Like for me, it was the beginning. That was my introduction to it, and that's when I started diving in and collecting and buying at least for the next 4 years throughout high school.
That's awesome. I want to talk about where your history with Marvel Comics intersects with your culinary like career, but I guess when does that start, your career?
I went to Virginia Tech for computer science. I mean, the comics turned into video games turned into computer science, and then I remember just being miserable trying to code and just like, I learned that I need like a social interaction with people to live my life. And computer science was not that. So I've taken like a 600-mile canoe trip when I was like 18. And I fell in love with like the feeling of being, yeah, it's weird. I got all kinds of weird things. And I fell in love with being like cooking for people, like that feeling. And I remember growing up and cooking with my mom, cooking my dad for family parties and stuff like that. And that feeling was something that I wanted to try after I came back from that trip and wasted my father's money at Virginia Tech for a year. So
I'm sure he was real happy.
He made sure I did pay for the first year of the CIA, which was very expensive as well. So he got me back. But
for everybody listening, that's the Culinary Institute of America. We're not paying the CIA for our work in the intelligence communities. Just to be sure, everybody understands.
Be a lot cooler, though.
It would be.
I don't know. Cooking's pretty dope.
It's fun, yeah. It's like cooking, for me, has been that thing where it's a job, but it's not a job. Like when you really love something and I'm sure you guys know when you're doing something, it's like I can work 100 hours a week, which I end up having to do still now. And I'm like, it hurts now, but it's still fun, right? I still enjoy it. I still love the hell out of it.
That's awesome. Okay, so where or how did you get into Marvel?
I think I met CB in China when I was working in Shanghai. And he and I just hit it off. I think my wife's parents were living in the same town that he was from. He and I spent a lot of years of our life in Japan, and we sort of had these like qualitative experiences. And he loves food, and I was a chef, and we sat talking about maybe one day doing a chef comic. I remember we were, I think, at one of the bars or corner tables in one of my restaurants in Shanghai. And that's when I really started talking to him. But that was a running conversation for a few years until COVID hit. And then he popped back up and I saw him in Connecticut in 4th of July. And he was like, let's do this. And we were like, oh. I was like, all right, I got nothing else going on. Let's do it. I can't wait. This is exciting. I mean, it was like literally goosebumps, like being asked to like work on a project for Marvel. I was like, yeah, this is, I was electric. I was like so excited, man. It was like I felt like a kid again. It was crazy.
It's interesting you talk about, you know, growing up in Japan and obviously manga influence on just your tastes of graphic fiction and stuff like that. But then you're teamed with artist EJ Su, who has that great blend of American comic storytelling, but also manga influences that are very clear in the work. And then, you know, I don't know how many of our regular Marvel Comics readers know about, you know, like the prevalence of food manga and like cooking manga and all kinds of like how that is deep into the manga side of things. How much of that was in your mind as you started to think about what you wanted to do for Test Kitchen?
That was very much an inspiration and something that the boss had said we need to sort of like aspire to be like, right? Like we're not going to like, I definitely had to do some research and read a bunch of those. Like my father's fluent in Japanese and real deep into that. So he was like, Paul, read these. CB was like, Paul, read these. So I definitely read a bunch of those to visualize like how we're going to do this, right? Like that's definitely a pretty big influence.
I mean, I was rereading the Test Kitchen comics this morning and I was like, oh, I need to eat. But then I went upstairs and I said to my wife, who is a great cook, she's the one who does all the cooking in the house because I murder everything. And I was like, babe, we gotta have these pork katsu tortas soon, please. She's like, well, that sounds great. And I was like, the recipe is extremely hard. And I was like, I was reading it, it's in the comic and it's really long and it's all these steps. She's like, you look at it and you see something difficult, but I look at it and I see how it flows and how it moves. I was like, oh yeah, if you have the mind for these things, you maybe kind of see it in a different way.
I think that's absolutely true, because it was literally from EJ being just the amazing artist that he is, just was drawing, like I was taking step-by-step videos and pictures, and he just drew them all.
Oh, that's cool.
So crazy, like how he nailed everything. I the chills when I saw that first issue. I was like, this is so cool. Like, it's a illustrated cookbook. Like, it's great. But you're right. It's so, there's so many details that we add in there. And then we're learning as we go and sort of like grasp more of an audience to like maybe simplify some things. Can we scale it all the way back so that like any 12-year-old can say, hey, mom, I want to make this, or hey, dad, I want to do this. Like when we, you know, Marvel, we come back to us and they're like, okay, here's the feedback, guys. Like, is there any way we can say, you know, we couldn't find Calabrian chili. Can we use other ingredients? Can you sort of go to King Cullen or whatever part, Safeway, I don't know what a grocery store is in your part of the woods is, and pick up and find these ingredients and get it done? And that is the goal. That's the hard part. And that's something that if we can teach those basics in this first season, and then move on through the next season with some more basics, some more like fun food and things that I'm constantly trying to think of, that will help us bring in a larger audience and make it just more exciting for everybody.
And I do want to like reiterate that, like, when we say like building off the basics, like these actual recipes that are in these first three issues are not like, I don't want to call them basic. Like, they're not, like, they are incredibly savory. And like, I was fascinated that these were like the first ones that you picked. Like, how did you narrow it down?
I think it was like, number one, the storyline matters, right? Like, as we build the character and she's going through this sort of event, like, okay, she's going to have a food truck. What are we going to serve in the food truck? Like, I remember living in New York City and like torta trucks in Queens and that sort of thing. Okay, let me put a spin on it, because she has an Asian influence, and do a katsu sort of torta. You know what I mean? Like, that's the way that occurred. And then further on, when we do other things, whether it's the butternut pumpkin soup, or now we're doing these dumplings, it is basically like using what's around, what's available, what's seasonal, what all the things that you would do as a chef, and just translating that into comics.
You mentioned the character in Test Kitchen and she's going through some stuff. So let's talk about, is it Anna or Anna in your head?
In my head, it's Anna, Anayama, but
Anna.
That would just, so it would be two different things. But I think that like traditionally in Japanese would probably have to be Anna.
I'm going
to
go with what's in your head. So Anna Amayama is the chef. She's the star of the book. And when you're talking about, you know, it all comes down to the story. That so clicks, because you got her in this first issue and her dream of owning her own truck and going through all the stuff. And like, I can visualize that torta truck and what that's like. And I'm just like, I can see her story, you know, so clearly from just the little bit that we are introduced to her, and that heartbreak that she goes through in that first issue. Have you ever owned or run a truck?
No, it's been one of those things. Like, unfortunately, I don't know. Like, everyone, like, I don't know. They made movies about it. It just got to be too much. Like,
yeah,
it was an overdone thing. But at the same time, it's still fun. It's still a little romantic, right? Like, it's still like, hey, if I could do anything and I didn't have the financial constraints of actually running a business, and I'm not saying people that operate food trucks are, but like, what would I do, right? It would be something fun, like a food truck or a small sort of gastropub. Like, those are the fun things that chefs are like, if I didn't have to worry about anything, right? If I could cook for the joy of cooking and to see people's reaction immediately, then those are the sort of things that I would want to do. And thus the food truck.
What kind of food truck would you do?
Oh, it would have to be a revolving guy. I wouldn't want to be stuck in, I mean, there's going to be, because of my life and background, a lot of Asian influence, but like, I love cooking. It just always depends. Like, depending on the year or the phase, like it's always changing, whether it's I'm going through this fall and I'm doing like an Italian phase, or I switch into some sort of French thing in the deep of winter, like that, like it just shifts, right? Like, will I always want to serve some sort of raw thing? Of course, like I can't, like.
Same for me, you know, some weeks I'm like, you know, ramen. Other weeks I'm like, you know, I'm more macaroni and cheese. I'll throw an occasional quesadilla in there.
You're
you know,
in your
depends.
30s now, Jasmine. Come on.
I'll rock some mac and cheese with some spam and some
let's go.
Chili crunch.
Let's go.
Come on. That's the list. I had no shame.
Whatever brings us comfort, right, in a lot of ways?
Absolutely. Come on. That's what food should just be, love.
Speaking of comfort, is there a dish or a meal for you that brings you that level of comfort that, like, whether it's you're cooking yourself or someone else cooks it for you, like what is that dish, that meal that brings you back and you just go, ah.
I would see, my mother's from a place called Guam. And so like even today, because we're giving people a vacation in the kitchen and stuff, I made staff meal and I made a dish called chicken adobo. And it's like, it's like also Filipino, Latin, it's all from Spanish influence coming through, but the Chamorro or people from Guam, it's basically like chicken braised with soy, vinegar, onions, and other seasonings. But that's the gist of it. And I cooked that today for the staff. I don't know if they appreciated it, but it makes me feel good. And I don't know. I was like, I can bang this out.
That sounds delicious.
My question about the comfort foods really kind of comes from issue 3, where we've got the barbecue for Janet's birthday. And, you know, it's a really sweet story, which is something overall, it's a thing that I love. I've talked a lot about it on the shows. I love our stories about our heroes where they're able to just like chill for a minute and have just character moments and relationships and just like not necessarily fighting the giant fights. And I think this, one of the reasons why this hits with me is because we get to see them in that light. And so we're here in just like this barbecue and it's great. And the moments where they start to smell things, where the Avengers are all there and they're like, what is that smell? Like, it's so pure. It's so sweet. It made me so happy. And part of that is the connection that Anna has to Avengers lore. By the time now we're into our 5th issue with now the Thanksgiving issue, we got some understanding that Anna is connected to the Avengers in a very big way. How did that come together?
Again, like when you have a mentor like CB, like he makes sure that you get all the Easter eggs. He's like, bro, we could really dive deep. Let's intertwine this and make this really interconnected. And that's what we're doing. And I think there's some more surprises coming up. I mean, there are more surprises coming up, which are going to be really cool.
Yeah, issue 3 ends on a very mysterious note. It kind of teases something to come, and I'm very curious.
Right?
We also want to make sure we talk about the Thanksgiving issue, which is great. We get to see a whole different side of Anna, and it's her cat, her roommate, all that stuff. It's really cute, a lot of fun. I got to ask, though, they make dumplings in this one, and Mbetu, her roommate, is from Wakanda, and as they're making the dumplings, he's like, we have a version of this in Wakanda. And that's true, what you said earlier, like every culture, kind of every region, everybody has their own version of dumplings. For my wife and her family, it's pierogi. And so I think, you know, it's whatever works for you. Do you have a favorite sort of kind of dumpling?
And why is it empanadas?
Sorry, what? I like some empanadas. I'll eat some empanadas. I tell you what, like being a chef and like having all these different cultures where you go in the world and like people bring in their foods like from their own cultures. Like the kitchen I have now, there's 3 different ethnicities and they all bring in their favorites and I'm like in their house in it. Same as in the comic, like just let me eat 6 tamales today. I didn't really need to do that, but I can do that. To get back to the question, I think, man, what is it? Din Tai Fung has this like shrimp and pork dumpling. I don't know if you guys, with this chili sauce, with like chili, soy, cilantro, scallion on top. I think a shrimp and pork dumpling guy. I used to go to different parts of China with some friends, and I took part in like a Chinese New Year. and we would go and just for 2 hours, 3 hours at night, just handful of dumplings. And that was really fun. And it's like a very simple pork one or like a scallop and chive or shrimp and chive one. I don't know. It's a hard, I'll eat anything in a dumpling. Let's be honest. If I can dip it in black vinegar and soy sauce and ginger, and there's some sort of chili element, it's just got all the things, salty, sweet, juicy. Like, let's not even go into soup dumplings. Are you kidding me? Like, there's so many different things.
Oh, don't get me started.
Ah, it's so good.
As someone who is terrible at cooking but loves dumplings and spends way too much money on takeout, thank you so much for making me realize how simple they are to make.
Yeah, and we wanted to make sure that, like, you could put whatever you want in it. Like, that's the fun of it.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
I thought that was really cool.
Like, the banana Nutella guy. But, like, we wanted to make sure, like, you can do whatever you want. And with all these recipes, like, you really, no one should be afraid to cook. What's the worst that's going to happen? You're going to make it. It's not going to be good. Whatever. You throw it out. You start over. You give it to the dog. Done and done, right? Like, just have fun. That's the approach we wanted to have. We want it to be fun.
Before we let you go, I have one last question. And this is something that, like, I think all of us have experienced. When we go to the grocery store, we've begun to notice that the prices on a lot of household items, a lot of staples have gone up. And, you know, with everything that's going on with inflation, like, I'm curious, what are some staples that the everyday person should, like, absolutely have in their pantry or fridge, and they can make heartier meals with without having to, you know, break the bank?
You're absolutely right. Every time I go to the grocery store, I'm like, what did I just spend?
Yeah.
Or what did I just buy? Like, I look in the cart, I'm like, what's going on? And I'm a chef, and I'm like looking at the prices as I'm buying things.
Yeah.
And my daughter's trying to put things in the cart. I'm like, no, put that back. It's still $300 every time. I don't even know what's going on. But anyways, you got to have butter in the house. You have to have a good olive oil. Those are the things that, like, those two things are great. For me, a good kosher salt, like a Diamond Crystal kosher salt. Those aren't, like, necessarily, like, you're not going to, like, save money on those, but you need to have those if you're going to cook anything good, right? Like, kosher salt, butter, olive oil, and then from there, I guess, like, chicken always seems relatively cheap, but vegetables almost are the way to go still, right? Like, I went through a phase in California, and I'm not really in that phase right now, but I generally do at some point during the year, where I try to eat mainly vegetable forward dishes, right? Which are supplemented by a little bit of meat, maybe sometimes, or egg, or maybe not at all. And for me, that's something that is very important. Just living abroad and seeing how different people eat food and utilize protein, that's one way to save money, is to cut back the amount of protein you eat. And honestly, like, you can get that same protein from beans, from mixing that with rice, like those sort of things you could do that are still just as delicious, and then flavor them with a little bit of bacon or a little bit of whatever you want, if you really need that, right? Like, let's using miso as a way to accentuate something or add depth. That's something that I like to do. I think that would be the takeaway. Cut down on the meats. Cut down on the proteins. Not trying to be all preachy. Not trying to be like, live your life. Like, do whatever you're going to do. But if you can do one meal a day, you're going to save some money for sure. One meal a day with no meat, you'll save some money. And it's probably going to be better for you. As a chef, I can probably say that unless you're tripling up on the mashed potatoes and being like, oh, I'm not eating meat. No, that's not going to work.
All the carbs.
Exactly. You can't supplement. Exactly. You can't be like that. But I would absolutely cut back on the protein for sure. Think about it. Like, you can get tortillas and just beans and any type of vegetable, sauteed mushrooms, chopped up whatever, slices of avocado, grilled squash. Throw it in anything in a tortilla. Your tortilla is your vehicle. With guacamole, salsa, fresh cilantro, nothing to talk about. Like, really, like, you're full after four. Right now is the fall. You can make squash tacos like that, easy peasy, right?
Done.
Can of beans, throw some chopped kale on there if you want to take it to another level. But otherwise, just some iceberg. Iceberg is delicious. Come on, love me iceberg.
I think that's going to be my plan for dinner tonight. But also, I think the title for this episode is Tortillas Are Your Vehicle.
Tortillas are your vehicle. You should use more tortillas in life.
I love that.
Go roast some delicatessen squash tonight. Put a little bit of, what's that, tagine? Get that tagine, Leah.
Oh, tagine? Hell yeah. I love tagine.
Tagine, roast it off, olive oil. Put that on there. Some black beans. You gotta
taco. Now I'm hungry again, damn it.
Mission accomplished.
Great stuff. Paul, thank you so much, and we'll keep our eyes open for the next issue of Test Kitchen.
Yes. Thank you guys. That was a lot of fun. Take care.
Once again, big thanks to Chef Paul Eschbach, and I should say Chef and writer Paul Eschbach.
Yeah.
Because everybody go read those 5 issues of Test Kitchen over on Marvel Unlimited. Those Infinity Comics are really, really good. If anybody out there does any of the recipes, let us know.
Yeah.
Please. I am, as I was telling Chef and you, Jasmine, I'm going to give the recipe, give my my MU to my wife and see if we can do the torta, the pork katsu torta. It's going to be so good.
You'll have to let me know how it turns out. I'm so excited. And yeah, please send us your pictures too, because there's nothing I love more than food pictures.
All right.
Actually, no, there is, and it's food.
Yeah. Eat the food, then look at the food. That's how it works.
Yeah.
All right, that's a wrap for us. This episode of Marvel's Pull List was produced by Ryan Penagos, Jasmine Estrada, and Cara McGurk Allison.
Brad Barton is Pull List Senior Manager of Audio Production and Development.
And Jill DeBoff is our Director of Audio.
If you are a fan of the show, make sure you rate and subscribe to the series wherever you get your podcast, and, you know, tell a friend.
If you're sitting down for Thanksgiving dinner this week, say, I'm thankful for Marvel's Pull List.
Yeah.
And then you can have a great conversation about comic books.
Or if you have like an uncle who is like, you know, always bringing up the worst topics like politics or religion, just be like, hey, whoa. You know what we can all agree on? Marvel Unlimited. Such a great app.
There you go. All right, I'm Ryan.
And I'm Jasmine.
And this is Marvel.
Your universe.